Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Hello there. I am Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I am here to help you with the many issues that surround sexual addiction. And there are many. You know, one of the things that I did when I first started the show was that I wanted to be available to people who suffered from sexual addiction. And then, as I knew that they carried the blame and the shame, I also knew that it was partners that carried the pain. So I said, well, I've got to be able to help partners of sex addicts. Now, here I am. I'm actually working with a variety of people to help them to live the life they deserve. And that really can be difficult if you've got a secret and you cannot or choose not to divulge that secret. Now, it may be that you don't know how to share your real self. You've been lying so long that you really don't know what it would take to get 100% honest. Does that sound like you? Do you have trouble being 100% honest with somebody, whether that be your counselor, your girlfriend, your wife, or your husband? Maybe you've even experimented with treatment, and you've gone to a few 12-step meetings, and you still have not been 100% honest. Well, I got to tell you, that denial, perhaps it's defensiveness, maybe it's minimization or justification, is going to keep you locked in a world where you don't get the help you need. So, I got to ask you, do you believe that your sexual addiction is the result of really bad habits that went on and on and on, that continued and continued and continued until they were routinized in your daily experience? They almost became obsessive compulsive. You couldn't stop, and you didn't know why. Or maybe your behavior stemmed from a trauma that occurred early on. Now, that might have been a molestation, physical or emotional abuse as a kid. Or you might have been involved in sex play with a neighbor, with a cousin, with a brother or a sister. And somehow that behavior also got routinized. You became kind of obsessed with it, and you reenacted that over and over and over again. And now as an adult, you are still participating in behaviors that absolutely are what we call trauma reenactment. Tonight, we are going to be dealing with the kind of wounding that can occur that you need to be able to resolve. I'm an EMDR trained and certified therapist. And I got into this field because I found that EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, was a fast and efficient way to work through and process early childhood trauma. Well, not only early childhood trauma, but even present-day trauma that had occurred because of a rape or an accident or some sort of significant event that happened as an adult. And what I got to tell you is, I'm making it sound like wham, bam, you can absolutely make it go away in a session or two. But here's what I know to be true. What may take 6, 7, or 8 weeks of beginning therapy can be resolved with EMDR. EMDR is this amazing way to process trauma without dealing with all the details. And tonight, we have Sonia J. Rudy, who is a certified EMDR therapist. She's an expert at treating people who have experienced trauma in their childhood and or in the coupleship as a result of the addiction discovery. So not only does she work with addicts, but she also works with partners of addicts who have been absolutely traumatized by finding out that their partner has been a sex addict, and they didn't even know it, and their whole world is rocked upside down. So I'm really excited to talk with Sonia as to what does she do in EMDR that makes it so efficient and effective. And I happen to know that she studies with the Parnell Institute, and so she's going to be talking more about that. And I wanted to meet with her so that I could find out more about her techniques. And I guarantee you, you will too. And if EMDR sounds exciting to you, and again, that is eye movement desensitization reprocessing, you can actually get on the EMDRIA website and look up EMDR therapists. Some of them are trained, and some of them have gone through supervision to be certified, just like sexual addiction therapists and abscess therapists. We are all trained and certified to provide the best possible therapy for you. Now, you know, I said that it is not unusual for somebody who has sexual addiction to absolutely be in a situation whereby they are in a bit of denial. They might not even know that they're lying to themselves. Recently had a man who definitely wanted to pursue his dream. And he wanted to write a book about his own sexual addiction. He's an excellent writer. He has an excellent story. But the dilemma is that if he in detail describes how he acted out, he may be triggering himself and triggering the reader. So, boy, that's a catch-22, isn't it? And then, in addition to that, he is also wanting some sort of glorification and gratification for his own behavior. I think we all can appreciate that. You know, there's one thing I know about sex addicts is that more often than not, they were not appreciated for all their strengths. And as a result, they look for ways to find immediate gratification and also attention and affection and approval through outside resources. That's what sex addiction is all about. Now think about your sexual addiction. What does it primarily give to you? And then ask yourself, are you getting that stuff now? Or in some sort of weird, warped way, is it something that will provide you an experience of immediate gratification and at the same time, it is not going to serve you long term? As a matter of fact, you're going to hate yourself. You're going to question yourself. There's going to be a lot of self-incrimination. You're going to wonder if you really are worth the validation that you could get. Now, here's what I know to be true. If you work with a good therapist, somebody who really understands how addiction works, you will more than likely be able to look at the root causes of why you have difficulty with wanting external validation. Now, I mean, we all want external validation, but if your external validation is a precursor to not feeling like you deserve it yourself, not feeling like you really understand your own self-needs, you're actually not going to feel like you deserve it. So again, I have to ask you, are you somebody who knows your own self-worth? Are you somebody who works a program whereby you are able to know your own strengths, you are able to treat yourself kindly and compassionately, you are able to work on your life issues and feel good about that? That truly is at the core of good recovery. And that can be very difficult. And the reason being that most people never received that as a kid. And believe it or not, it's very difficult when you receive it later in life to believe it. And that is truly what you have to do, is not only look for healthy ways to get it, but be able to believe it in your heart and receive it when it comes. Do you know what your strengths are? I always ask my clients to come up with 50 personality strengths that they believe about themselves. Maybe that is you're tenacious or generous or loyal or friendly or loving or caring or persistent. I don't know. But you need to have those personality strengths available to you so that you can take your life to the next level and own them. You got to own them. You can't be shy. You got to know that you are really somebody who deserves those personal accolades. I am Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, And if you want more information about that, you can go to one of two websites. The first one is carolthecoach.com, where you can read over 600 articles I have on self-esteem and depression and anxiety and trauma. They're all very interesting. And you can see my television appearances and hear excerpts from my radio shows, not just this radio show, but other radio shows I've had on Drive Time. And then if you want a more specialized situation, you can go to Sex Help with Carol the Coach and find out about sexual addiction and partner trauma and read some of my clients' stories and read some of the advice I have and get on my blog, which is on ITAP and AppSats, and go to my YouTube channel. Because if you go to Sex Help with Carol the Coach, whether you're an addict or a partner, you'll get good, solid advice in 10 minutes or less about what you need to do to improve your life. And here's what I promise. I promise you that I interview the experts in the field of sexual addiction and partner trauma. And tonight, again, I'm going to be working with Sonia Rudy, who's a certified EMDR therapist. And actually, I heard wonderful things about her, and I knew that she really worked with trauma in one's childhood and also in the coupleship as a result of addiction discovery. Now, if you're a partner listening to the show, you know what I mean. When you first found out about your husband or wife's sexual addiction, it threw you into a real sense of fear and anxiety. And if you're an addict and you were coming clean for the first time, or maybe he or she discovered this about you, you also experienced that trauma and anxiety. So this is a show that's going to talk about eye movement desensitization reprocessing, EMDR, and how helpful that can be in your treatment. So, Sonia Rudy, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show. How are you?
Hi, Carol. I'm doing really well. We have a little snow out here.
Where are you calling from?
Calling from the Kirkland, Washington area.
Oh, yes, you have experienced some snow. And I so thank you for coming on because you were highly recommended. You really work with a lot of intense wounding that's occurred through the use of EMDR. You actually ascribe to the Parnell Institute, and I happen to know that's one of the best schools of thought for EMDR. So tell me a little bit about how you got involved in this field.
Oh, thank you. Well, many years ago, I was working with those individuals who had the compulsive sexual behavior. And so in that time when I was a young intern, I was interning in groups, and I learned that, this is really something. And then I was also interning in the women partners groups of those people who were compulsive sexually. So I got to hear both sides of the coin, and it really piqued my interest. So I went on when I was completing my master's program to pursue how to treat individuals with that kind of trauma. And after having had a background in critical incident stress while I was in the aviation industry, it turned out that those two actually synced up quite nicely.
Okay, so that's how you got started. And tell me, you really believe in EMDR. How would you describe that technique or that type of therapy?
EMDR, the psychotherapy of EMDR, as many people know, was actually founded by Dr. Francine Shapiro many years ago when she was walking through a park. She had received some personally distressing information, and then she noticed how her eyes had started moving from side to side and that somehow the disturbance had lessened. And so this was really quite amazing, and she reproduced that many times and then set a protocol based on trial and error. And as the years went by, more and more research was done to verify how efficient that therapy was. And ultimately, it was approved by the American Psychiatric Association and the Department of Defense. So, you know, the acronym, as many people know, is EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, and it's a form of adaptive information processing. And so this is the standardized EMDR protocol that so many therapists have learned to use to help people who were struggling with the resolution of their traumas, including some of the first people who actually received EMDR were veterans of war during the Vietnam era. They reported they had not actually been able to sleep or feel any sense of freedom from intrusive thoughts or imagery since the war. So it was quite a revolution to have such a powerful tool.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I know is that a lot of people don't understand what EMDR is. They think it's some sort of hypnosis. They don't understand that it is probably the most scientifically researched therapy technique in the world. And there are more research studies that talk about this technique than any in the experience of psychotherapy. So why do you believe that a partner or addict should use EMDR therapy?
Well, thank you. You know, I've been using EMDR since the early 90s, and so I have worked with clients who've had a variety of different kinds of injuries, anything from motor vehicle accidents to sexual abuse or abandonment, and specifically as a fellow CSAT, a certified sex addiction therapist, and a person who has specialized in treating partners. It's really something to see how when a partner or a sex addict have had events in their history that have been traumatizing, we know that it informs their nervous system, those events. So especially after a disclosure has been made or a discovery, we know that that fight, flight, or freeze response that occurs in the brain that are natural for us as humans, when we feel under threat, these survival modes mechanisms kick in, even though an imminent threat may not really exist in real time anymore. In a sense, it's though the brain has really lost its capacity to remove the foot off of the body's internal accelerator, and it feels something like a gas pedal in the car when it's stuck on full throttle for people internally. So that kind of emotional shock to the brain can really create a substantial amount of ongoing physiological and psychological distress. So, you know, sometimes people may not actually realize they've been previously traumatized as a child. They may need help understanding that, as in addition to being a partner or a sex addict, that a chronic exposure to an unavailable parent when they were little can impact them, or being in an environment when they were growing up where raging or violence or even humiliation were present can have a very significant impact on a child who repeatedly didn't feel safe in their home. And so those kinds of childhoods can lead to a trauma response later on in life, and they contribute to a partner's sense of diminishing reality or trust in his or herself. It may contribute to an addict's sense of internal shame and feeling like they're never going to be able to heal. And so it certainly doesn't justify acting out behaviors, but it does begin to give us some insight into why seeing people using or abusing alcohol or food or pills or drugs or gambling or porn or video gaming or even overworking, that these are ways of coping to numb out from pain or triggers or anxiety. We know, like you had mentioned, Carol, that EMDR is effective in treating those kinds of issues, and it's been based on 25 years' worth of empirical research. So, you know, I believe EMDR is a very powerful tool when it's administered properly and can help people really heal and find lasting relief.
Well, and you actually work with the Parnell Institute core faculty, and she is amazing in that she has made it her life. She's dedicated her life to helping people who've experienced either little T trauma or a big T trauma. Can you tell us a little bit about the Parnell Institute?
Yes, thank you. You know, I would love to tell you about the Parnell Institute. It's something that is the dream and vision of Dr. Laurel Parnell. I met her a few years ago. I became quite enthralled with her adaptation of EMDR, and I saw her actually on a video performing EMDR without the client visible, and something was really changing, at least in the affect of what little bit was shown of this person that was receiving treatment. And I thought, that EMDR is really different than the kind that I've been using all these years, and I want to find out what she's doing. I want that for my clients. It was something having to do with the way she held her presence. She was very grounded. She was very connected. It was really intimate but boundaried. It had a warmth to it that was so engaging. So the attachment-focused model Laurel developed, and I really actively as a therapist pursued that training and found it to be just a tremendous breakthrough for me as a therapist to be able to help my own clients have breakthroughs. You know, it is something that is different than any other kind of protocol. We call it our EMDR power tool.
And say a little bit more about that. What is following that like?
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, attachment-focused EMDR is actually a modification of the original eight-phase standard EMDR protocol. And so Dr. Parnell, after working with traumatized individuals for many years, discovered that there was this attunement where the right side of the brain and the right side of the brain of hers and the right side of the brain of the client begin to process something more differently. She described this as a phenomenon, and she calls it limbic resonance, where the limbic system of the brain in each person is resonating. And it appears that this is both the client and the therapist are connecting in this empathic way, which is non-cognitive. And since we now know that trauma is also stored in the right side of the brain, where memory is implicit and not explicit, it became clear to her that the trauma networks in the brain could actually clear with resource tapping and bilateral stimulation with EMDR tappers or auditory processing aids. And she went on to perfect that witnessing of the client by adding, you know, safe attachment resources into the therapy process so that each of the individual clients, you know, whatever they reported, they could relate with. And what I like about this is that it's reminiscent of what we've heard from the teachings of Dr. Patrick Carnes in the past when he's talking about having a fair witness to hear his story. And what's interesting about this is now, in addition to that, the trauma can actually be cleared while that fair witness is listening to the story with safe attachment resources in place. And so that protocol has, you know, five different more key pieces, whereas the other standard had more eight standard phases.
Absolutely. And for our listeners who may be tuning in for the first or second time, Dr. Patrick Carnes is the founder of Sexual Addiction, and he started the movement. He helped to write the Sexual Addicts Anonymous Green Book, and he put together a protocol that is helpful for sex addicts. And certainly his daughter, Stephanie Carnes, has also made it her mission to help families and spouses of sex addiction. So these two people are very, very famous, and it sounds like the EMDR protocol that you use is comparable to the efficiency that Dr. Carnes uses when he talks to addicts about forming a committee so that they can actually manage their sexual addiction.
Well, I wish I could speak more to that. I'm not really sure, but I do know that when Pat first was teaching about sex addiction, and even before there was a CSAT credential, you know, he would tell us about what it meant to have a fair witness to hear his story. And I think where I was correlating this is that, you know, what Dr. Parnell is saying with attachment-focused EMDR is there's got to be the client's safety, and that's what Pat was talking about. Someone has to be safe to hear your story. There has to be a nurturing therapeutic relationship to facilitate healing. And Laurel uses that client-centered approach. You know, approaches to help create and repair the neural networks in the brain through the use of resource tapping and to use attachment-focused EMDR whenever a client actually, when their needs indicate that. What's different about EMDR therapists that I've noticed is their capacity to be present. There's a wholeness to that that is captivating for me, that they may really hold a special way of attuning. And for addicts and partners who've not had those needs met in childhood, this can be a reparative process that is pretty astonishing to witness in person. To be able to have a capacity to hold nonverbal communication and for the therapist to be able to sense their own body and to witness their client's body as they swallow or breathe or hold their breath, to be able to be real and authentic or playful and accepting, to be empathetic and curious, that is a part of the attachment-focused approach where it's less formal, it's warm, and to be able to hold a steady, loving presence. This capacity to have compassion while maintaining appropriate boundaries, to be comfortable with strong, big feelings, to have wisdom to know, as a therapist, you don't really know exactly what the client, where they're going to go as they're processing information spontaneously. That these are all part of the ways that providing attachment-focused therapy has revolutionized the way I approach treating clients. It is really certainly a power tool, and it's more surgical in that way. I think this is why we're talking. I'm very much an advocate of this kind of treatment for anyone, not just partners and addicts.
Well, exactly. And now let me ask you, why should any partner or addict consider EMDR therapy over a more conventional form of therapy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I think if we look at it from a more holistic approach, that when people are getting help through body work, help through psychopharmacology, maybe their physician is helping, with prescribing medicine, maybe it's through body work like yoga or massage or acupuncture, having a major support system. I think those are all essential elements of what attachment-focused therapy is actually about. We don't want to just isolate and say this is the only thing that can help. It really does take a team, and it really does take more than one thing, I think, to help people move and heal. And so empowerment for clients, I think, comes through utilizing those treatment issues or those treatment recommendations that a competent therapist will recommend. So I do think that pertaining to the EMDR itself, that the reduction of triggers, the elimination or minimization of shame, the deepening core strength, the capacity to have more resiliency, the new understanding that from an internal state that, I actually am getting better, or I do feel stronger, or now I can do this new thing that I didn't have the courage to do before, or I'm not feeling as restless in my sleep, or I'm no longer having intrusive imagery or flashbacks. Those are very positive, and those are very powerful results that I've seen in my practice among those who've had EMDR.
Well, absolutely. And, I too am an EMDR trained and certified therapist.
I know. It's wonderful.
I love the fact you said that, obviously having a variety of tools in our toolkit helps the client to ascertain what they need the most. And I don't know if you got to hear the beginning of the show, but EMDR, although it is not a miracle cure, it really works fast, mm-hmm. and it processes things a lot quicker than typical and traditional talk therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So now,
mm-hmm.
if we have clients who are wondering about this form of therapy, what would you suggest that they do to find somebody who is EMDR trained in their own community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you can go, anyone can go online and look up the EMDR, the Parnell EMDR Institute, and there is a list of therapists who are, you know, listed by state. There's also the international organization, EMDRIA.org, I think that one is. And you can look that up by zip code. It says find a therapist, and you can put in your zip code and find it out, find out a therapist that way. You know, I think, as you're pointing out, there's more and more therapists that are trained in EMDR. And when this happens, I think, you know, we therapists, those of us who have followed along and seen the results for our clients, it is so powerful that it makes believers out of us. And if you've seen that for a number of years or even 20, it does take on a certain meaning that yes, we have something now that actually is effective, and it's not the same as talk therapy, because the right side of the brain it doesn't respond to talk therapy, and that's where much of the trauma is stored. So that's why talk therapy, you know, while it may help to vent, it doesn't clear the trauma.
Well, exactly. And you know, when I first took this training before I became certified, there was a little bit of me that naturally was resistant to doing this work, because I really enjoyed the relationship that I had with a client that involved talk therapy. And then I started learning and practicing EMDR, and I realized how important it was to work with the right side of the brain and that bilateral stimulation of the brain work that EMDR actually touches.
Mm-hmm.
It was so fast, and it really bypassed a lot of conventional talk therapy. And I said, you know, I may be missing really talking to my clients, but this stuff works. And if I care about my clients, I'm going to want them to get the healthiest and the most efficient form of therapy possible, which typically is EMDR. So I became a believer, and I realized I put myself back in the back and said, no, therapist needs to really identify what it is that is most helpful for the client. Now, a lot of clients say, is it time to start EMDR? And I don't know about you, but when they sit down and do a good, thorough assessment, and then I do the resourcing component and really help them to feel grounded and safe, we're off to the races. We start right away. What is your prescription for when to start? When is a good time to seek out EMDR?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think any time you think about EMDR would be a good time to seek out a therapist, because it means that there's something you're thinking about already that may be noteworthy, and so to take that to your therapist would be a good idea. But to your point, you know, when would be the best time to begin? I think that's really each clinician's best clinical judgment. Every person has their own story. So if somebody has complex trauma, it may take a little longer, but so you may do a little more resourcing in the beginning. And to be fair, there is talk therapy in between, and there's debriefings, and there's kind of getting a sense of things, and there's reevaluations. And so when a person begins, you know, to expect that there is this time of getting acquainted, and like you had mentioned, the history taking and stabilizing, and when a person has the ability to say, you know, hey, stop, or please continue, or here's where I'm feeling that in my body, and you get a sense that they can remain grounded, I look at whether the window of tolerance or whether there's a band of tolerance that that the person has the capacity to be within. And then we talk about that well ahead of time. You know, if you're feeling too flooded, we don't want that. If you're feeling too flat, you're not going to actually be able to process. So that work is done in preparation prior to us ever going into any trauma work. And I think that's a distinct difference for those listening, that there is both resourcing EMDR, like what you've mentioned, Carol, and like Laurel's attachment resources. And then there's also trauma processing. So it's not only trauma processing. There are stages to that that help a person actually tolerate revisiting an old stored memory and having the neural network light up and then have those memories processed down the channels of memory until they feel distant or resolved or reshuffled and are in a file somewhere. And then when you go back, as my clients report, going back to that file, it's no longer where it once was. The trigger is no longer there. And so for partners, this is giant. Because if they've had disclosure or discovery, their nervous systems are usually pretty jacked up. And so, couples can really spiral into a lot of tension. And so to have both people, if possible, do their core work, to have some of these injuries treated, even if it means going back into earlier childhood issues, is very, very important for the healing journey to be complete and feel more peaceful.
Absolutely. And so, obviously, there are some circumstances where EMDR may not be appropriate for treatment. Can you go over those kinds of situations? Because as my listeners are attending to what we're saying, they may wonder if EMDR is appropriate for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And I think that's a really important question. You know, just because I'm an advocate for EMDR doesn't mean that I think every single person should have it, even though I'm a strong advocate. It's been my experience that that women who are pregnant may be at risk for, for themselves, for their child, if they have really intense emotional reactions. And so I would take great care with that. If I have a client who is pregnant, I often will say, what about if we just really resource your nervous system rather than taking you down and doing this trauma work until after baby and you are safe and sound and you're in a different place, and we'll prepare you for that. And so I think that's really informed consent. I think it's making sense to protect in the client's best interest and in the baby's best interest. I also think those clients...
Absolutely. That kind of thing, you talked about pregnancy, and certainly there mm-hmm. are also some neurological conditions where EMDR may
yes.
not be warranted.
Yes, and such like seizure disorders. I know there are some professionals who are, very skilled in understanding which specific neurological disorders that could be treated. And I would just really advocate for full medical releases between the practitioners, the healthcare providers, because seizure disorders or even a disconnected retina for those therapists that are using light bars or facilitating eye movements. There are other medical situations that just have to be carefully assessed ahead of time. And I think the therapists will usually know when EMDR is not appropriate. If they're trained, they should ask you, if you're the client, to sign a medical release with your other medical providers. And that'll be a sign to you as a client that you're more likely to get a good coordination of care. And so if your therapist says, no, I don't think it's best for you, then it's okay really to listen to that and look at other options for treatment.
Yes, and earlier you mentioned complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And again, mm-hmm. for our listeners who may wonder what this is, we obviously deal with people who have anxiety disorders, and they may have had a history of very difficult situations that caused either post-traumatic stress or complex post-traumatic stress. And for those clients, they have dealt with anxiety on so many different levels for so long, you may actually have to do some traditional therapy to help them really feel grounded and resourced before you begin any kind of EMDR. I know that you and I both know what it's like to treat partners of sexual addiction, and oftentimes partners have complex post-traumatic stress. So can you describe what you believe post-traumatic stress is?
Yeah, thank you. And as I'm doing that, I want to circle back. I think with attachment-focused EMDR, it's a little bit different, Carol, in that you can actually begin resource tapping with the attachment-focused protocol very early. And so that's a stabilization piece. And sometimes if someone's very dissociative, I might, engage a person, get them grounded, get them in the room. And there have been cases where it's been, very difficult, but to actually help them be in contact with their body and return into the room with attachment-focused therapy, and then beginning the remaining portions of the protocol of history taking, et cetera. So it's slightly different. But the PTSD, you were talking about partners and complex PTSD. A lot of times, partners have had things happen in their history, and so these layers of injuries, maybe it's a death or maybe it was, dad or mom left, or they had a mom that seemed like a crazy mom, or they had a dad that seemed like a crazy dad, or maybe they, were abused by a family member, sexually or otherwise. Those layers down in early childhood, they create a fertile soil for the growth of more of a complex kind of PTSD. So cumulative stress, as it rises and as it becomes more layered like the soil, by the time you get to something like a disclosure or a discovery, the nervous system of the individual just gets completely jacked. And so it doesn't mean that it was the disclosure or the discovery that caused the complex PTSD. It means it was really the last straw because there was a vulnerability that was enduring that was within the person in earlier years. And this is true for addicts as well, as we know as fellow CSATs, certified sex addiction therapists. A high percentage of both addicts and partners have had sexual trauma. So we really want to honor that for those people who have had complex trauma, there is likely to be dissociation. So the process may be slowed down somewhat. There may be assessments, like even little quizzes that people take to inform the therapist so that the roadmap of treatment is made clear. And that attunement with the therapist and the trust and the bond between the therapist and the client can grow sufficient to warrant the kind of treatment you and I are talking about. We're going in deep, and we're not going to go in deep until all the things we need are taken care of and trust is established.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great description. So that is something that a good therapist can help a client understand. Is EMDR really safe for that person at that point? Because truly, some people who have post-traumatic stress disorder or complex post-traumatic stress, they do fear decompensating, and they feel like they're not ready for the intensive bilateral stimulation. And so, we as EMDR therapists have to assess when they are ready and take them through those channels very slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, depending on the therapist and the client and, who you have sitting in front of you, your processing will be slower or faster depending on what the band of tolerance is. Again, what is within the window where the client is not, flooded into a fight, flight, or freeze response, and what is within the window of tolerance where they're not flattened and so depressed that they're not actually able to access the material. So there is a process that, you know, I think can be very gentle to help prepare a person so that those trauma responses, such as, you know, hyper arousal or intruding imagery or avoidant behavior or anxiety or even holographic made up ideas about what one believed happened just because one has a few facts. You know, I think I wrote about this either in Mending a Shattered Heart or in the Clergy of Sexual Misconduct contribution I made in either one of those books. There's a holographic making upness that we as humans will connect the dots in between facts. And so when partners or addicts, and especially with partners, have a certain amount of information, but they don't have the rest of it, our brain naturally wants to resolve things. And so the intrusive imagery of something that did or did not happen is, you know, one of the signs of a jacked up nervous system. And this is where EMDR is so powerful, because there, especially with attachment focus, because there are resources to bring in that can help resolve and mitigate those kinds of responses a person may have. Oh, Carol, before I forget, I think this brings in a good point that I'd like to make sure I mention. What EMDR does not do, EMDR will not actually take away something that is appropriate. So if a person has something that is, you know, an appropriate response to a given situation, it will not take away an appropriate response to a given situation. What I mean by that is if a partner still feels nervous about their spouse or partner acting out, and there's reason to believe they don't have enough time in recovery to really have ongoing sobriety, EMDR is not going to take away an appropriate fear response. It's just going to help the nervous system be quieted so the person can think more clearly about what's going on and be regulated. And so it won't take away what a person needs. It will take away what you don't need.
Well, absolutely, and I am so glad that you pointed that out. I am talking to Sonia Rudy, and she is a CSAT, a Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist, an MA, and a licensed mental health professional who is EMDRIA and Parnell EMDR approved, and she can be reached at Sonia, SonjaRudie.com. If you want more information about her, or if you're a clinician listening to the show, Sonia, do you do presentations? Do you do workshops?
I have been known to do those, yes.
Okay, well, there you go. This woman not only treats clients, but she also presents for clinicians. And she really understands the fragility and also the strength of a client. She knows that, you know, you may be embarrassed by what has happened to you in your past, and she's ready to be able to make you feel comfortable, give you the proper resources, talk with you until you're ready to try EMDR. Now, for people that don't want to talk about their childhood, but they would rather just move forward and receive treatment from an EMDR therapist, what would you tell them? I mean, how do you help them make the decision? Is EMDR appropriate for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think it's natural to think that this could be, you know, kind of a voodoo process, because, you know, until people really understand that it is, you know, there's a science to it, to have healthy skepticism is really okay. And so when people are not interested in sharing about their history, it usually means there needs to be a little more time with the therapist to develop a safe and comfortable environment and to have rapport. A lot of times shame can prevent people from saying what's really happening. So although we need more of a thorough history taking, not every single detail needs to be explained in the EMDR processing. So the gist of it is that just like Patrick Carnes in the CSAT trainings for therapists says, here's a trauma egg. Draw inside this trauma egg each of the major traumas you've had in your life that really, you know, that really had an impact on you. You know, I was in a bicycle accident, or my mother was killed in a car wreck, or, you know, my husband, you know, has disclosed this to me. Whatever it is that's inside that trauma egg are really important for your therapist to know, because that informs the therapist that there may be issues in your past that have informed your nervous system in the present. And so with EMDR, the clearing of those memory channels helps the person actually become more free. So as a therapist who's working with a person who may not really want to talk much, it's really okay to go as slow as that person needs to, in the sense that you don't have to give every explicit detail, but the therapist will benefit and help you better with as much information about those major events in your life that occurred to you as possible. And so there's some real opportunity for even people who are more cognitive or concrete sequential, like IT folks. We can do EMDR, and they don't have to, you know, feel like they have to get all emotional or anything, but they're going to still continue to process and access places, you know, in primary, secondary, and tertiary areas of their bodies, whether we know that or not, is going on as we watch them. So the processing will happen, and we don't have to have every single detail, but as much as they can tell us in an appropriately timed way, the better job we do at serving them as professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, there is no doubt that some people who have had trauma and that are anxious and afraid, whether that's complex trauma or post-traumatic stress, they have a tendency to disassociate. And you said earlier that, you know, a lot of people don't understand what EMDR is. They think it's hocus-pocus or something woo-woo.
Mm-hmm.
For the person who tends to disassociate, and for our listening audience, that means when you kind of leave your body because it was a safe way to cope during the trauma, what would you recommend for them?
Yes. You know, I think one of the first things I'd recommend for a person who tends to dissociate is to interview a therapist. You know, do they listen? Do they get a sense in their body that this person is interested in helping them? Do they get a sense that there's any warmth in them or understanding? To really pay attention to their body, because as EMDR professionals, part of our jobs, I believe you would agree, Carol, is to help people stay really grounded in their body so they can eventually do the trauma resolution work. And so it may be that there would be, some verbal assessments, you know, asking questions, more narrative. It may be that there's a paper pencil, a quiz to take to help the therapist understand how much the person is in their body or out of their body. And to be fair, you know, all of us dissociate. You know, humans were designed to do that. I don't know about you, but the last time I drove across the country, you know, I don't remember certain places where you pull off for gas. So I just remember when there was a flash flood in one city, and, you know, I'll always remember that. But all the rest of the freeway, I could, you know, that's a form of dissociating. So is zoning out on the TV, right? But the kind of dissociate that creates a loss of time or impairs a person's ability to perform at work or take care of your children, or the kind of dissociation that robs you of your time and of your life, that's different, and that's problematic for most people. And so, you know, I would recommend that you interview a therapist or shop for a therapist that you feel like it will be comfortable, you will be comfortable with them, and then tell them that you dissociate and see what they do with that. and see if they help you get grounded and oriented into the room, or ask questions about that, or, you know, do they use essential oils or other props in the office to help you with a tactile sense, like a really little rough rock or some putty? Do they have something in their office to help you have a tactile, you know, connection to your body? You know, dissociation can be on the spectrum, very mild or very extreme. And so the natural dissociation is really okay. I mean, but the other kinds, not so much, and can really intrude. And actually, you know, people can have significant difficulties managing and coping in life with that kind of dissociation that I think you're describing.
Absolutely. Well, Sonia, I cannot tell you how helpful this has been. You know, people don't understand what EMDR is, and then when you tell them it's eye movement desensitization reprocessing, they look like deers in the headlights because that sounds so complex and foreign, and you've made this very understandable. And we know that a lot of our clients do suffer from trauma, whether they've had a sexual addiction or they're the partners of a sex addict. Mm-hmm. So, again, they can contact you by going to Sonia Rudy, and that's SonjaRudie.com, or they can email you at SonjaRudieImhc@gmail.com.
Oh, it's LMHC. Yeah, it's LMHC, sorry, Licensed Mental Health Counselor.
Got it. So, again, that's Sonja, and then Rudy, Rudie, LMHC@gmail.com. As we end for tonight, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Carol. First of all, Carol, thank you for permitting me to be on your show. I greatly appreciate that you're reaching out to those who are underserved, who may have questions and may not have been able to ask them. And for your contribution to our professional community, I greatly appreciate that. And to the listeners, I'd like to just say that there is hope. Don't stop. If you're confused or if you have tried and had no success, try again. Find someone who will go for you, be your advocate, and help you get through the trauma. It is possible. And this kind of processing and this kind of success is not always advertised because it happens quietly in the offices of confidential rooms with therapists all across the country and all across the world.
Thank you so much, and thanks again for your contribution. You came highly recommended. I can't wait for you to come to my city so that I can see you present. Thank you so much. You have a
thank
great
you,
day.
Kim. All right, have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You too. All right, again, that was Sonia Rudy, and she is an expert at EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, a technique that I learned when I was working with sex addicts and their partners, and it came highly recommended to help people work through their issues in expedient ways. Well, that's the end of the show, and I so thank you for being a part of it. And, you know, as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. And if you've got some stress, some anxiety, some complex stress, or perhaps post-traumatic stress disorder, I'm going to ask you to look up EMDR and see if that might be a good fit for the kinds of things that you want to work on. You have a great week, and I'll see you next Monday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach.